Blog Talk Radio.
Context of white supremacy, Gusty Renegade dialing in for another program to share constructive information on racism, white supremacy, what it is, and how it works. Thank you all so much for tuning into the program. We appreciate you and hope more than anything, we hope you are getting helpful information. If you are not, please do not waste your time listening to the broadcast if you do not find the information to be of constructive value. Today's broadcast, I'm super thankful that I guess he was willing to come back and chat with us again. He was just here in June and shared incredibly helpful, constructive information, and we're just really, really appreciative that he could come back and share some more of his time with us. He is a kinsman of Frederick Bailey Douglass, a national certified school psychologist. Real privilege to have him back on the broadcast. I think you will appreciate hearing from him one more time. He was also just at the second annual Nat Turner Day weekend celebration. I'm very curious to hear how that went down. Our guest for today's program, Mr. Umar Abdullah Johnson. Are you with us, sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Privilege is ours, sir. The privilege is ours. I wanted to hit the ground running. We just had Sister Nefertari of the Children of Southampton with us just a couple weeks back. Irritated Jeannie was just a guest on the program this past Friday. You all participated in the Nat Turner Day weekend celebration. Could you kind of share some of your thoughts on what you saw at the event and what you shared as one of the opening speakers?
Well, I thought it was a very powerful event, as it always is. Sister Nefertari did a wonderful job organizing and putting on the actual celebration. I thought that the highlight of the entire weekend, and everything was powerful, but of particular interest to me was the Brothers Keeper musical, the musical play on Nat Turner, the life of Nat Turner, and actually how we have come to be where we are today as a result of slavery, domination, and imperialism. It was a very, very relevant play that was put on by the Brothers Keeper spoken word hip-hop group, and I hope I'm not misrepresenting them by describing them in that way, but the play was just powerful. It looked at yesterday and today. By looking at yesterday, I mean the actual Nat Turner interaction. By looking at today, showing some of the same evils and ills that we continue to struggle with as a people. They actually mixed their music and their lyrics in from the latest album within the context of the Nat Turner musical, and it was just mind illuminating. It was spellbounding. It was spectacular. Nothing but energy. Nothing but positive vibrations. It was one of the best plays that I've ever seen. So I definitely, want to big up Brothers Keeper for what they did. Me myself, I focused on the war on black boys, as that is my specialty and my interest. And I basically looked at how the field of psychology and the field of psychiatry in support of white supremacy has been waging war on black people since slavery by way of misdiagnosing them as a form of social control.
Wow. Wow, that fits right in with what I would like to focus on today's broadcast, and pretty much what you focus on your daily activities, how the system of white supremacy works to obliterate black masculinity. Just have had several listeners who have had comments on recent broadcasts and things that they're dealing with in their personal lives. And I think it would be real relevant to get information on that. This is Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. talking about what the system of white supremacy does to black males. I want to play this clip and guess get your thoughts on it. Mr. Neely Fuller Jr.
The most impotent creature in the form of a person on this planet is a black male. Period. No matter where on the planet they are, the most powerless person is a black male. The most powerless person on the planet, in the form of a person, is a black male person.
Again, Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., and I guess keeping in mind, this is a statement that I hear you make frequently in your lectures, where you say that with regards to white people, anything they start, they finish. What are your thoughts on that statement and, I guess, the focus that white people place on destroying black masculinity?
Well, one of the arguments that I always try to make clear to African people is that whenever you want to destroy a race of people, you always target the men, because it is largely through the men that a group is protected. Any type of group, whether it's a nation, an organization, an army, it is manhood that is ultimately responsible for the preservation of a people by way of defense. And so although women are responsible for the procreation of a race by way of giving birth, it is the men who must protect that woman in order that she may give birth. So I definitely agree. I would say that black men are definitely the most attacked, the most repressed, the most maligned, you know, population on the face of the earth. I would definitely agree with that. But I would also say that although I agree that we are powerless from the standpoint that we are not bringing forth our God-given energy, I wouldn't say that we were powerless in terms of not being able to do anything about what we're going through. Our problem as black people, as the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey already said, was our greatest enemy was disorganization. That's the greatest weapon used against black people. And when you look at black men being the most suppressed group on the face of the earth, you have to ask yourself, why hasn't there been more organization amongst black men to do something about the situation in which we suffer? And the answer to that problem is real simple. There is ego and there is espionage. And by ego, I mean that the black male, by virtue of being so emasculated in white society, wants to dominate with an iron fist in his own society. And that is why, Brother Gus, a lot of our organizations tend to fail and are not successful, because either you have a dictatorial leader who is functioning like a white man amongst his own people. In other words, the organization was started to fight white supremacy, but the leader of the organization or the persons who actually brought it together to fight white supremacy are functioning under a white supremacist mindset. And that's one of the reasons why we have not been successful in combating white supremacy, because most of us, even as victims, have the mindset of the white supremacist ourselves.
Wow. Wow. When you were with us in June, you shared your theory that there are five stages in the extermination of the black male, and the first stage is miseducation. Can you talk about the role, because I just spoke with a black female listener, and she was remembering her own experiences in the education system of white supremacy, and she said that she did pretty well in school, and people always told her that she was doing well, and she said she specifically remembered a black male student, and she thought he was smarter than her. He was, you know, just a really intelligent young man, young male, and she said she remembered that the white teachers seemed to really chop him down. She felt that, and this was in reflecting. She said she I don't know if she really remembered this at the time she was going through it, but looking back on it, she just thought, wow, they really did a lot to chop him down, and he just had a lot of problems, and it seemed like she was remembering exactly what you talked about, how the miseducation system is that first step in the extermination of the black male. Could you kind of give us more information on that?
Well, miseducation, without a doubt, is the most essential step to the extermination of the black man and to the race in general, because education gives you access to somebody's mind. And a lot of times we don't look at that, but education is the process of conditioning a person into the thoughts, beliefs, actions, and aspirations that you would like for them to have. So if you can miseducate, you don't have to worry about going to war with the miseducated population, because you will control their mind in such a way that they will see your control over their lives as absolutely normal in the first place. See, the goal of white supremacy for black people and for black males in particular is to normalize oppression. Let me say that again. They want to normalize, N-O-R-M-A-L-I-Z-E, normalize the oppression. So when it happens to you, Brother Gus, you don't even think twice about it, because you have already been conditioned into believing that this is the natural order of things. The most powerful way the white supremacy has been able to stay on the earth as long as it has is because it has convinced non-white people, and Africans in particular, that it is natural for white people to rule. And if it is natural for white people to rule, it is natural for white males to rule. And if it is natural for white males to rule, that means it is also natural for black people to be ruled, R-U-L-E-D, and it is also natural for black men to be exterminated. So you can't endorse one end of the spectrum without endorsing the opposite end of the spectrum. If the white man is good, the black man is the devil. And if white people are good, then black people must be worse, because we are the natural opposite of the European. So whenever you endorse the belief that white people are superior in any way, shape, or form, you are also endorsing the fact that black people are inferior. And so when a black man is murdered, when a black man is put in jail, it is seen as normal. Look at it right now, Brother Gus. Only one out of every four black males graduate from high school. That would be considered a travesty if it happened in white America. But it's totally normal in black America. Black people are at least three times their rate in the state population than they are in prison. In other words, in every state in America, with no exception, black people are 300 plus as incarcerated as their number in that state's population. If that happened to Jews, if that happened to Arabs or Indians, or if that happened to Europeans, that would be considered an act of genocide. But because it is normal for black people to be on the bottom, and because it is normal for black people to be oppressed, nobody says anything about it, especially the victim.
Wow. I want to make sure I repeat that again. I felt that was real important. One of the chief goals of the miseducation system under white supremacy is the normalization of oppression, white supremacy. Make sure folks heard that. I also think a key component of the miseducation under white supremacy, I think a key component relates to what you said earlier about when you do have black people who form organizations and make an effort to work against white supremacy, they still have that mindset. They end up being dictators. We lost Mr. Johnson. I will see if I can reconnect us right now. Sorry about that, gang. I will dial him back right now. Hang tight. Let's see. Okay, almost there, ladies and gentlemen. Give me a hot second, and I will dial him right back. Okay, I'm going to have to restart my Skype really quick. Hang tight. I'm going to play a commercial until I get Mr. Johnson back with us. Hang tight. Context of white supremacy. We'll be right back.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired? Racism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
I just dialed Mr. Johnson back, and I could not get through. Hang tight with us, and I will dial him again, see if we can get him back on the line. I'm just going to wait a second or two and see if we can get him back on the line. My apologies. Hopefully we'll get it corrected and get him back. I'm curious to get more information and get some questions from Justice as well. As I'm waiting, I will give out the lineup for the remainder of the end of summer blackout here at the context of white supremacy, because we added a show today. So I'll make sure I give out the rest of the lineup because another broadcast was added. So we'll be back on Wednesday, September 1st, with Mbewe Asia Ishangi. He's the founder of the Ghetto Times, and he'll be here on Wednesday, September 1st at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. The show that got added will be on Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Professor Griff will make his second visit to the context of white supremacy this Thursday. On Friday, Paul Ifeomi Grant, live from the United Kingdom. He'll join us this Friday. It will be at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. On Sunday, September 5th, Dr. Frances Kress-Welsing makes her sixth visit to the context of white supremacy, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And Tuesday, September 7th, Kush the Black Unifier. He will be here at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, September 7th, context of white supremacy, end of summer blackout. I'm going to make an effort to give Mr. Abdullah Johnson a jingle one more time. As my goal for the year is to put Tim Wise out of business, I'm going to play sound clip with Mr. Wise, Admitted White Supremacist and Justice, and I'll hopefully have Mr. Umar Abdullah Johnson with us as soon as I get back.
Are you a racist?
I didn't hear the part before that. Was that silence for a while before the question? I didn't hear that.
I just said, are you a racist?
Oh, okay. I thought there was something before that because there was about 20 seconds of silence. Well, you know, as I've said before on Gus's program, I have, as a white person growing up in this culture, internalized certain elements of racist and white supremacist thinking, no question about it. I've talked about that, written about that. I distinguish
Excuse
that.
Excuse me, I just want yes or no.
Well, see, but that's not the way human psychology works. The way I've answered the question before, and I will answer it again, whether one likes the answer or not, is that I have internalized aspects of racist thinking, as I would suggest every white person in the system of white supremacy has done. Now, that is different, however, from saying that I believe in, support, and advocate the system of racism and white supremacy, which I actually reject and attempt to fight against. But I would be dishonest if I did not acknowledge that I, like every other white person, have internalized certain aspects of racist thinking. I've always said that, but I do not believe that is the same as saying, as I think some believe it is the same as saying, that I therefore support actively.
All righty, context of white supremacy. We should be back, and I believe we have Mr. Umar Abdullah Johnson back with us. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Outstanding, outstanding. Okay, so when we lost you, I was connecting your theory about the importance that racist white supremacists place on miseducating black people, and I wanted to ask if you think that is connected to the mindset that you see amongst some of the black males, even who are in organizations that are ostensibly working against racism, white supremacy, but they have that dictatorial mindset and they're trying to prove how tough they are and how in charge they are of what's going on. Do you think there's a correlation between the two?
Oh, without a doubt. One thing we have to understand is when you have not been taught by your oppressor and fighting against your oppressor, you can still realize a degree of intellectual freedom because your thoughts, habits, cultures, and customs come from a source other than the oppressor. So you can therefore think outside of his box. So what that means is many of our brothers and sisters back home in Africa and in the Caribbean, when they fought against white supremacy to throw it out of Africa and throw it out of the Caribbean, even though it's still there in a neolized form. But nonetheless, many of them were able to do so because they were able to step outside of the white man's frame of mind, his zeitgeist, and look at oppression for what it truly was and be able to attack the white system by using non-white strategies, philosophies, and theories. Okay, but the problem we have today, Brother Gus, is many of us have been educated, most of us have been educated by this white man. And so we're educated by the same person who we're trying to fight, which makes the struggle extremely difficult. Why? Because if your sole source of education has been the European, whose strategies are you using to fight the European? Whose organizational structure are you using to fight the European? Whose sense of self, whose ego, whose emotional reactions are you using to fight the European? You're using his. One of the reasons why we have been so very unsuccessful since Mr. Gandhi and trying to achieve some degree of independence from the white man is because our self is not independent from the white man. Before there can be a physical revolution, Brother Gus, there must be a spiritual, emotional, and intellectual revolution. All behavior, all emotion is preceded by self. Until the black man and woman of the world of America and the African of the world changes the way he thinks, until we step outside of the European zeitgeist, we will never be free. Because even if you beat the white man and achieve a sense of independent nationhood, you will run your nation the same way the white man ran you. It's what's going on in Africa right now. The white man is not physically there, but his customs is there. His belief is there. His hierarchy, his organizational structure
Do you have some suggestions both for black people who have their children in the miseducation system? I believe Minister Farrakhan references them as the killing fields. Do you have some suggestions for black people whose children are in that system now and things they can do to try to cleanse their mind of this racist mental infection, and suggestions for people who are older, who've already gone through all that, and they want to try and, for lack of a better term, detoxify, decolonize their mind?
Okay, yes, indeed. Number one, you have to guard your unconscious. One of the biggest problems we have, Brother Death, is that we do not guard our unconscious. What do I mean by unconscious? I mean the thoughts and lessons that are given to any human being beneath the level of the conscious mind. For example, when you're listening to music, part of the music is being heard by your conscious mind. Most of the music is being heard by the unconscious mind. And the unconscious mind is the most powerful aspect of consciousness because most of your mind is beneath your awareness anyway. And anything that can be stuck into your consciousness beneath your awareness can be that much more used against you because you don't even know it's there. It's like if a thief sneaks in your house and is robbing you blind, and you see your money is leaving, but you're saying, how is my money leaving? I lock my doors. There's nobody else in here. But the thief is sneaking in and robbing you blind because you don't even know he's there. And that is how white supremacy programs the African mind, by teaching you when you don't even know you're being taught, which means we have to do what? Eliminate most forms of entertainment. Entertainment is the biggest source of brainwash against African people. The music, the movies, the magazines, and the media. The music, the movies, the magazines, and the media. These are the primary venues through which they brainwash black folk. And so what we have to do, particularly with our children and with ourselves, is turn it off. Eliminate the television, or at least control its usage. Stop reading his propaganda. Stop watching his movies. Anything that has any anti-African propaganda in it must be eliminated from our mental diet. Total elimination. We must go on a fast. We must go on a spiritual fast from white supremacy and the negative images that are sent from it towards us. If we do not uncondition the mind, if we do not recondition the mind, we'll never get free, because he's controlling us by remote control through the unconscious.
Wow. Wow.
And a lot of times, Brother Gus, a lot of times brothers and sisters get upset with me, because you always hear brothers and sisters say, well, I'm ready to go to work. I don't want to talk. I don't want to waste any more time doing anything except struggling against the beast. I want to struggle against the devil. I don't have time for anything else but struggle, but struggle, but struggle. And Brother Gus, one of the historical lessons that we have failed to learn is that so many black lives have been lost. So many resources have been wasted. So much money and time has went by the sideways because we are not looking specifically at why we keep on running in circles. We keep on going black to the future. And the reason why we keep on going black to the future is because we're starting to realize we're standing in quicksand, and the quicksand is the collective unconscious of black people that has been programmed against their own best interest. So the more you think you're going forward, the more you're actually going back. And we are in quicksand, brother, and that quicksand is our own damaged unconscious mind.
Again, our guest for today's program, nationally certified school psychologist, Mr. Umar Abdullah Johnson. My co-host, she is all of 11 years old, but she is studying racism, white supremacy, and hoping to eradicate it as soon as possible. Justice, if you have some questions you would like to ask Mr. Umar Abdullah Johnson, please go right ahead.
Hello. What media would you recommend for kids to learn and understand racism, white supremacy?
Well, one of the things that I'm investigating now, young lady, I'm looking at some of the black comic books. There's some black comic books that are out that I'm being told have some pretty revolutionary ideas in it that would be excellent for our young people to consume. So I'm actively investigating the comic book market to see what is there, because I might even want to become a distributor of some of the African-centered comic books. But what I recommend in lieu of fictional material is that you consume as much grade-level nonfiction material that you possibly can. I want you to read about your heroes. I want you to read about your sheroes. Anything that you can understand on your grade level that is nonfiction and approved by your parents, I want you to consume that as opposed to watching TV. Consume that as opposed to going to the movies. Consume that as opposed to reading some of the popular magazines and the blaxploitation novels that have become so popular in our community. See, what we fail to realize is every time we watch a sitcom, that degrades us. Every time we watch a movie, that degrades us. Every time we listen to a song, that degrades us. Every time we read a newspaper article, that degrades us. Okay? Your self-concept as an African is being damaged in a subtle and unconscious way. It is hard for a people to respect themselves when they will tolerate viewing information, propaganda, that is negative about themselves, okay? You cannot raise your child on a diet of negative African imagery and then wonder why the black woman wants to be a white woman and why the black man wants to marry a white woman. They were taught that at home by their own parents by being allowed to watch so-called harmless television, harmless radio, harmless books. There's no such thing as a harmless piece of information. There's no such thing as a harmless piece of propaganda, because propaganda and information are all about doing what? Controlling a mind. And anything you allow to go into your mind will take a root there until it is plucked out, and it is much better to prevent a negative seed from falling into the garden of your spirit than pulling out one.
What do you think causes so many black males to end up in greater confinement? And what I mean by greater confinement is prison.
Okay. Well, it's by design, Princess. When we got out of slavery, most prisoners were white. The American prison system was a white institution. After slavery, it became a black institution, largely filled up with black men. And that was done by three things, Princess. Number one, taking small, petty crimes that tended to be committed by black people and making them into felonies. That was the first thing they did after the Civil War. They said, since we're not going to educate black men, and since we're not going to give black men jobs, that means they're going to have to steal or get involved in illegal employment. So what we're going to do is make the penalty for stealing or the penalty for illegal crime, we're going to raise it to the level of a felony. And this way, we can keep them out of society a whole lot longer and basically re-enslave them. So number one, they reclassified the crimes code, and they're often reclassifying the crimes code on a state level and on a federal level. Criminals are not in jail because they did anything bad. There's many people who do things bad who never go to jail. Prisoners are in jail because the government of that particular city, state, or nation decided to select those particular crimes to focus their crime-fighting agenda upon. In other words, if you wanted to turn prisons white tomorrow, then you would make drunk driving a federal felony crime that was punishable only by mandatory minimum sentences. In other words, every time a white man was caught drunk driving, he would have to go to jail for 5 or 10 years. If you did that, you would change the complexion of the prison population, because more white men drive drunk than black men do. But because more black men, okay, engage in crack vis-a-vis a percentage, their percentage in the population, we're going to focus on crack crimes as mandatory sentenceable offenses, because we know that crack is the poor man's drug. So we're going to use the poor man's drug to target black men and fill up the prison. So number two, in addition to reclassifying the crimes code, the second thing you do is you limit the accused opportunity to receive adequate defense or adequate representation at trial. For example, 95% of all criminal cases in America are plea bargained. Let me say that again, because I don't know if your listening audience knows that, Brother Gus. 95% of all criminal cases are plea bargained. Only 5% of criminals had adequate representation they went into the courtroom. So when you are plea bargaining, that means you are doing what? You are at the mercy of whatever offer, okay, the DA, who's working along with your public defender or court-appointed lawyer, is willing to give you. So, number one, you reclassify the crimes code. Number two, you eliminate access to decent representation, which is going to improve the chances of you going to jail and going to jail for a long time, okay? And then number three, what you do is you create a situation where everybody sees the targeted victim, because the criminal is really a victim, he's a victim of society. What you do is you create an atmosphere where everyone in the society sees the intended victim as a useless member of that society. Once you have programmed American society to see the black man as nothing but a useless menace, no one will object to you taking him off the streets.
What causes autism in children?
Autism in children, in my opinion, based on everything that I've read and studied, autism is directly coming from the amount of immunizations that black people are giving their children, and any people for that matter, but we're focusing on our own race. When you look at certain religious groups who do not believe in immunization, for example, the Amish, and there's Amish here in Pennsylvania, they have an almost zero amount of autism in their population. Why is that? Because the Amish do not immunize their children. It is against who they are, and it is against what they stand for. Okay, the problem with black folks is because we have been trained by Europeans, we think anything he does with his kids, we're supposed to do with ours. Okay, and as a result of that, since he wants to inoculate his children, we're inoculating our children. But we're failing to realize that inoculations grew out of a need for the European population to protect itself against certain diseases, okay, that was ravaging their population. And the diseases that ravaged the European did not necessarily ravage the African. So when we're giving our children flu shots and swine flu shots and bird flu shots and measles shots and all these immunizations, nobody's stepping back asking themselves, well, what's the rate of black people who've actually caught these diseases? I mean, if we know immunizations were designed for white people and not designed for black people, why are black people giving them to their own children? So we are destroying our children because we have total faith in the white man's infallibility. In other words, we believe that he cannot mess up, he cannot be wrong, he is right under all circumstances and at all times. And until we change the core belief that everything we do is wrong and everything we do is right, we will continue to suffer because he is killing us through our worship of him as a political deity.
What are some healthy ways to help a young child function more effectively who has high functional autism?
What are some ways? Well, that would be specific to the child because autism is a spectrum, Princess, which means you can have two children with autism, but they present totally differently. You might have one child whose autism is totally nonverbal, which means they don't communicate with anybody. They can hear you, but they're not interested in talking. So you don't have to teach that child social skills. You're going to have to teach them assertiveness skills. On the other end, you might have a child who's very verbal, but who actually wants to dominate the social interaction that they have with their peers. You might have another autistic kid who just wants to be alone all to himself. So some autistic kids tend to be verbal. Some tend to not be verbal. They can all speak, but some just choose not to be. Some have a very restricted range of imagination, which is why a lot of autistic children prefer a certain type of routine. They don't like their routine to be disrupted because their imagination is not as flexible as regular children. On the flip side, you have autistic kids whose imaginations are very flexible, but they can't read nonverbal language. In other words, they can't tell when you're sad. They can't tell when you're happy by reading the expression on your face. Autism is a communications impairment. It's a neurologically based communications impairment where you have difficulty communicating with other people socially, verbally, or nonverbally. So whether that is you don't like to interact verbally, you don't like to interact physically with people in a social manner, or you have difficulty reading nonverbal behaviors, it's a communication disorder. And the way we can eliminate it is by stop giving our children these immunizations.
how do you treat autism in children?
Autism is somewhat, and this is kind of related to your earlier question, but autism, again, has to be targeted individually because some children are on the spectrum. All autistic children are on the spectrum. For example, an autistic kid can be retarded or an autistic kid can be, you know, mentally gifted. An autistic kid.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Hang on. Mr. Abdul Johnson got disconnected. I'm going to try and get him back. Hang tight, everybody. My apology. Well, actually, I'm not going to apologize because I didn't do anything. This could be suspected racist interference, but I will work on getting him back right now.
Okay.
All right. I think that might have been my fault. I thought I heard a beep on my line, and I clicked the ignore button, but I think that might have been a beep on your show, so I accidentally hung you up. My apologies.
Nope, no worries at all. Glad we got you back, sir. Justice, go right ahead. You were in the middle of your response to her question.
Yeah, I was speaking about the autism. Autism is so varied in terms of the children that you really have to look at that specific case. Like, I work with autistic children all the time, but they vary so much in their intelligence, their social ability, their verbal communication, that you really have to look at the child and see to what degree the autism is actually impairing their functioning in everyday life.
I see. What do you think of an autistic child that walks away from the park where their parents are?
Well, a lot of children walk away from the park, not just the autistic children. And a lot of that, again, normally, though, an autistic child does have attachment to their caregivers. So I wouldn't say that that's necessarily common because autistic children do, you know, they're regular children, so they do develop the emotional attachment that other children do. Now, you do have some autistic kids who don't. Their communication is so impaired that they don't even form a social bond with their own parents. And with a situation like that, basically they just have to be well-supervised. But as they get older, their ability to develop those relationships tend to improve. But most of the autistic children I work with definitely have an attachment to their caregiver. In fact, sometimes the attachment is overly aggressive because the caregiver, in the eyes of the autistic child, is the only person with whom they feel safe.
Thank you. I really appreciate the response.
Thank you, Princess. Very thought-provoking question. I'm very, very impressed with you.
Okay. How did you learn about racism and white supremacy?
Well, you learn about it by studying it. You study the history. Everything starts with history. You have to have a solid understanding as to the why, hows, and when white supremacy came about. The problem with black people is we tend not to know why, we tend not to know how, and we tend not to know when. Okay, who, what, when, where, and why. Okay, who, what, when, where, and why. The 5WH questions are extremely important when you're trying to find out anything about any aspect of any part of your life or society. So we have to find out who and the why. And the most important thing to understand about white supremacy is the fact that it is functionally relevant for white people. And what I mean by that, white people's supremacy is tied up in their ability to oppress other people. So it is functional. The reason I'm saying this is because I've heard a lot of very distorted explanations for white supremacy. I've heard people say they don't have Jesus in their life or they don't have Muhammad in their life, which might be true. But even if they had Jesus and Muhammad in their life, it's not going to stop anything because, remember, it was the Catholic Church that sanctioned slavery for the Europeans, and it was Arab Muslims in the Middle East, Western Asia. It wanted to be called the Middle East. It was Arabs in the Middle East who used Islam as a tool of slavery in northern and eastern Africa. So religion ain't got anything to do with it. But you have some black people who are miseducated, again, by white supremacy, okay, and by their own community, because we should be educating our own, who believe that it's just an absence of religion. You have other people who say that it's because white people haven't developed their compassionate skills yet. They lack empathy. They don't have certain types of emotional ranges of expression. That's not true, because when you see white people around other white people, they're able to be compassionate and supportive. They're just not compassionate and supportive with black people who they consider to be less than humane. Okay? Then there's the miseducation argument. There's some people who say that white supremacy exists because white people are miseducated about how important black people have been historically. I totally refute that argument, because white people know black people's history better than black people do. In fact, some of the so-called foremost scholars on Africa are white folks. Although I disagree with them being labeled the foremost scholars, my point is a lot of white people are well acquainted with Africa's glory. A lot of white people are well acquainted with what black people have done for them in this country. A lot of white people know that black people are responsible for 75% of all the inventions that were created in America prior to the end of the slave trade. They're aware of that. But what does that have to do with the functionality of white supremacy? It has nothing to do with the functionality. White supremacy exists as a protective system to keep a minority of people on top of the world and in control of the world. Point blank, period. All the religion, all the social skills training, and all the historical education isn't going to do anything about that.
Do you have an idea of how white people learned about racism, white supremacy?
Say that one more time, Princess.
Okay, I'm sorry. Do you have an idea of how white people learned about racism, white supremacy?
Well, white people didn't have to learn about it. They developed it, and they simply passed it down to subsequent generations by way of modeling, socialization, and direct teaching. In other words, you know, white parents model to their children how to deal with black people without saying anything out of their mouth. It's like black parents model to black children how to interact with white people without out of their mouth. Okay, so they don't have to learn about it. They developed the system, and they developed the system because they saw a need to rule, and a part of that need to rule was based on their own biogenetic survival. In other words, if white folks freely interacted and intermarried with other races, they would become extinct just by virtue of being inferior genotype. Okay, white genes are recessive. The blue hair, the white, excuse me, the blue eyes, the white skin, the brown hair, it's recessive. So if you intermarry that with dominant genes, not just black people, you get intermarried with Asians, East Asians, Indians, Native Americans, you name it. Brothers and sisters from the Caribbean, they would be extinct. So in order to protect the gene type, the gene pool, they have to segregate against other groups as a way of protecting themselves. I don't have a problem with white people not mixing with black people to protect themselves, okay? Every species wants to survive. That's not my issue. My issue is they absolutely want to control and dominate other people because they are in the minority. And because they have developed a God complex, they have taken their minority status and turned it into majority status. They have taken their inferiority and turned it into superiority. And what I mean by that, instead of white folks saying, okay, something must be wrong with us because we're only 10 to 15% of the world's population, they have flipped it and said something must be very, very divine and God-given about us, because even though we're 10 to 15% of the world's population, we are able to control the other 85%. So if you're a black child growing up, excuse me, if you're a white child growing up anywhere on the face of the earth, and you see that your people are a minority, but they are controlling the majority of the world's population, it would be extremely difficult for any white child to draw any other conclusion than I must be the supreme being on earth. Because if I wasn't the supreme being on earth, then why am I ruling? And the truth of the matter is that the reason why white people are ruling is because, number one, the tactics that they use to gain control are tactics that most other groups would never even think of or consider. Now, as a result of white supremacy, you see other races becoming more and more barbaric. In other words, they say, well, if this is the way he has gained control, then maybe we need to do some of that to gain control. And as a result of that, they have become the primary teachers of all of humanity. So you have Asia, and you have Europe, and you have Africa and the Caribbean and South America. You have everybody emulating the white man's barbarity and aggressiveness because they've seen how long he's been able to control the world by brute force, and so now they're copying him. And the mistake that black people make is because we refuse to study the strategic purposes of warfare in an effort to protect our own people. I don't believe we need to become aggressive. I don't believe we need to subjugate other groups of people, but we have to develop some military sophistication, because without military sophistication, we are going to continue to be a dominated people, because what's being done against us is being done through military science. And the only thing black people got is religious science and the science of forgiveness and the science of self-hate. We do not have a military science. And because we do not have a military science, we are actually taking our military strategies, directives, and opinions from our priests and our imams and Negro intellectuals, all of whom are a part of white supremacy, all of whom are used by white supremacy to oppress black people. So we can't get it from them. One of the biggest things black people are lacking in our community, internationally and locally, is a strong grip of military science, how it can be used for our benefit, and how it has been used systematically for our extermination.
How should non-white people react to white people in general anyway?
Stay away from them as far as you possibly can. I believe that white people are toxic to the health of black people. And I don't say that with any disrespect, and I've said it to white people. Okay, I don't hate you. I don't consider you less than myself. But I know that the collective unconscious of your race, okay, views my people as inferior. And because you view us as inferior, you would never look out for us the way you would look out for one of your own people or for someone who you consider to be a human being. So I believe white people are toxic to black people. When we are around white people, we get killed. We get hung. We get lynched. We get fired. We go to jail. We get exterminated. Okay? We get miseducated. I haven't seen a single example of white people being in close proximity to black people where it actually benefits the black people. I've never seen it. Nowhere in history can someone prove to me where integration benefited black people. Integration has actually benefited white folks, because what it did was it stripped us of our economic independence. And whereas before we used to have our own institutions, schools, businesses, black people in America actually own oil companies and gas companies. Something that we generally associate with, you know, the Rockefeller dynasty and the Rockefeller family, who's one of America's greatest, eugenicists and racial exterminators, by the way. John Davidson Rockefeller created his own eugenics group, blacks, but then he also funded over 200 other ones. So my point is, integration serves white people. It doesn't serve black people. The reason why white like black people being in close proximity to them is because they have a fear that black men want to be with their daughters. They're not necessarily fearful of black women in their neighborhood. They're not fearful of black children. They're fearful of black. And we also have to understand that white people don't truly believe in integration the way black people do. They believe in economic integration because you don't have any institutions. So they economically integrate with you to control your economy. They believe in religious integration because when they integrate with you religiously, they provide you with the images of white Jesus that makes you celebrate them. Okay, they believe in political integration because since you are a minority in this country, if you integrate with white folks, all you do is dissipate your power. So white people as a minority have always been able to maneuver and use the majority groups in their own best interest and against the majority groups. Okay, but integration has never benefited black people. And the more we try to integrate, the harsher white supremacy becomes. The reason why there's so many black men in jail, because there's so many black men who want to date white women. The reason why there's so much violence out here today is you got black people who want to work with white people, live with white people, live next door to white people, date their families, go to church with them, drive like them, live like them, sleep like them, vacation like them. White people don't want anything to do with blacks. They just make it look like they did, but they only favor integration in the economic realm and in the political realm, where it's most important and where they can dominate you.
Okay, thank you. That'll be all for now.
Thank you, Princess.
Context of white supremacy, justice, Gus T. Renegade, and our guest, nationally certified school psychologist, Mr. Umar Abdullah Johnson. I want to make sure that we get back to the theme of black masculinity, but I did want to ask, since it came up in Justice's question, you were talking about the reason that white people are motivated to practice racism, white supremacy. When you were with us in June, you talked about the psychogenetic theory of race preservation. We had Kevin McDonald with us, who is a white person. He is a professor at the University of California, Long Beach, and he writes pretty extensively about the need for white people to explicitly practice racism, white supremacy. Or he doesn't use that term, but what he says is ethnocentrism. And he says he wants to see white people proud of being white and saying explicitly, I am defending the white race. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, number one, I don't take issue with it. And the reason I don't take issue with white ethnocentrism is because most groups are ethnocentric to begin with. They believe that they should openly identify with who they are, and they believe that they should openly protect and preserve what they are. My issue with white ethnocentrism is that that becomes a nice way of disguising white supremacy. For example, I am a pan-African nationalist. I believe in identifying openly with who I am and protecting and promoting using my race. But I am not a black supremacist. I don't believe that African people have a right to dominate the world and use it for its own selfish ends. The difference between ethnocentrism and white supremacy. But what I would say is that a lot of white people tend to use ethnocentrism as a political right way for disguising their white supremacy.
Wow. What do you think this is how things are going to go over the next?
I think they're already there. In fact, I've been studying whiteness. And a lot of white people lately, there's a movement towards a white identity that supersedes any minority or ethnic descriptor. For example, this book's been written on how Irish and Italian and Anglo and Jew, okay, are coming together to say we are white. In other words, because there's so many dark people on the face of the earth, we can afford to fight amongst each other to an extent that allows them to get the upper hand. So although the Jew might still have animosities towards the Italian, and the Italian might still have animosities towards the German, and the German might have animosities towards the Anglo, okay, white people recently have came to a point that they have decided to agree to disagree, but to preserve white supremacy at all costs. Identifying as white is only a strategy to promote white supremacy. That's why you have the European Union. Okay, that's why you have all these different European blocks of international power. Yes, it's being done politically, but it's also being done biogenetically to preserve who they are because they see the threat of non-white people to their extinction. See, in order for white people to exterminate everybody else, they have to kill them by violent means. In order for black people to exterminate everybody else, all you need to do is cohabitate with their women, which is one of the reasons why they can't stand miseducation. It may look like they tolerate interracial dating and interracial marriage, but that's only because the white women who most black men tend to marry are the white women no other white man wanted to marry in the first place.
Hmm. Wow. And you also talked about how I just saw one of your recent lectures where you talked about how, generally speaking, the people who benefited most from the superstar black athletes who make a lot of money are middle-class white women. Is that accurate?
Yes, indeed. Yes, without a doubt. Second only to the owners and major stakeholders in the athletic teams themselves who make the most money. Okay, the second group to benefit most from black athletics financially is the whites of the athletes, most of whom are white when you look at the superstar athletes. So when you look at the NBA and the NFL from a financial standpoint, It is almost exclusively a financial investment for a white woman. And see, the black athlete doesn't see it that way, Brother Gus. They don't realize that this white woman is looking at them as a financial investment. She's not looking at you because she loves you, and I love this black man with his African heritage and his ancestors having fought for him slavery. She could care less. The black man is looking at her because he wants to be viewed, okay, as equal to a white man, and he feels the only way he can feel equal to a white man is to marry a white woman and have her validate his manhood. Let me say that again. The black man, for most of them, not all, but for nearly every black man who marries a white woman, he does so partially due to the emasculation complex that has him running around looking for a white woman who he needs to validate his manhood. So he's looking for her to validate his manhood because, as far as he's concerned, a black woman can't do anything for him but have sex with him because she's nothing but a B-I-T-C-H, as our queens were called during slavery. So he doesn't want to marry, okay, a B-I-T-C-H. He wants to marry someone who he has been trained erroneously to believe is a queen. So he marries the white woman because he considers white people to be superior, number one, and he feels the only way he can feel superior is to have a white woman staring back at him, validating his manhood, but she's looking at him purely as a financial investment. So if the white woman who marries a black man views him purely as a financial investment, I have a question. How is a white woman marrying a black man any different from a white woman owning a black man?
Wow. Wow. I want to hop back to the five stages in the extermination of the black male, because your third stage is greater confinement and incarceration. And I was just talking to a non-white male yesterday, and he asked if I would ask you, what are some of the psychological effects of being a black male in prison in a system of white supremacy?
There was a very famous prison experiment. And because you like to do research, Brother Gus, I want you to do research on the Stanford prison experiment. It was done at Stanford University. And in fact, the European who actually carried out this study is actually the same man who hosts the Psychology Today special that comes on, I think, either Life or the History Channel, or one of them. But there's a show called Psychology Today that's hosted by a gentleman named Philip Zimbardo, Z-I-M-B-A-R-D-O. There's actually a film, and I need to order it myself. I've seen it, but I don't own a copy. But it's actually a film on the Stanford Prison Experiment by Philip Zimbardo. He also wrote a book that I recommend all black people buy and read, and it is called The Lucifer Effect, Understanding How Good People Turn Evil. It is a New York Times bestseller. I'm actually holding it in my hand. I went up to my bookshelf to get it so I could reference it. Okay, The Lucifer Effect, Understanding How Good People Turn Evil by Philip Zimbardo, creator of the Stanford Prison Experiment. Now, to be brief, Brother Gus, the Stanford Prison Experiment was an experiment where Dr. Zimbardo took regular people who had not committed crimes, I believe they were college students, put them in a prison, made some of them inmates, and made others of them correctional guards. Okay, now remember, this was just an experiment, but what he learned was that just by virtue of treating someone like an animal and just by virtue of allowing someone to act like an oppressor, you can transform the identity that a person has about themselves. And in the prison experiment of Stanford, Brother Gus, the whites who were, and I think it was mostly white folks in the study, the white kids or college students who were made prison guards became oppressive, they became violent, they became barbarous. Overnight, they became this way, just by having on a uniform, just by being told that they were in control. And the ones who told that they were inmates, they started losing their mind, they became emotionally distraught, they started developing psychopathology. The conclusion of the experiment was this: the power of a label is so overwhelming that when you tell somebody that they are something and you treat them like they are that, after an amount of time, they will forget who they really were and become exactly like that which you told them they were. And that is what is going on with black people in America, and particularly our brothers in jail. They are being treated like animals. They are being told that they are animals. And many of them, when they come out, if they do not get a corrective cycle of history, will continue to behave like animals. American society has created the Negro simply by treating black people like they were Negroes and making us believe it was so. Everyone needs to read The Lucifer Effect because it shows you how black people have been turned into their own worst enemies.
I want to make sure I got the title and author correct. Is it Philip Zimbardo, The Lucifer Effect?
Yes, sir. Philip Zimbardo, The Lucifer Effect. And let me see if I have the publisher. Random House is the publisher. If you go to any of the online bookstores, I'm sure you can get a copy there. You could probably get a used copy, but this is something you might want to have a new copy of, Brother Gus. And along these same lines, it's important to say that black people have to study literature that is not black. See, one of the things we have to realize, although we have come a long way since slavery and we've come a long way since colonization, it hasn't been a very long time, which means that the amount of scholarship that is available to black people is extensive, but it still has its limitations. For example, there is no black study that exists to mirror the Stanford experiment. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that no one's going to fund a black psychologist experiment to see how racism affects his people. You tend not to see that type of thing. So all we can do is philosophize about it and talk about real-world experiments, but the type of research that needs to be done for black people, nobody's going to fund that. So sometimes we have to look at the research that's being done by Europeans and see how it applies to us. This book was not written to be a treatise on how white supremacy turns black people into animals. It wasn't written for that purpose. But if you read it with your third eye, you will see how this book specifically addresses how you have taken God's first people and made them the world's last people.
Wow. For people tuning into the broadcast, this book should be attached to the program. You should see it scrolling by, so if you want to click on it, it'll take you right to Amazon.com, and you can pick it up right there, but it should be attached to the program, The Lucifer Effect, Philip Zimbardo. You touched on, in a different lecture that I heard, you talked about how...
In fact, Brother Gus, not to interrupt you, Brother Gus, but I want to read a quick excerpt from the book.
Yes,
this is page 179, and this is Dr. Philip Zimbardo. He says, quote, "The negative power on which I had been running for the past week as superintendent of this mock prison had blinded me to the reality of the destructive impact of the system that I was sustaining. Moreover, the myopic focus of a principal research investigator similarly distorted my judgment about the need to terminate the experiment much earlier, perhaps as soon as the second normal, healthy participant suffered an emotional breakdown. While I was focused on the abstract conceptual issue, the power of the behavioral situation versus the power of individual dispositions. I want to say that again. The power of the situation versus the power of the individual dispositions, I had missed. He says he had missed seeing the all-encompassing power of the system. And he puts the word system, Brother Gus, in italics, that I helped to create and sustain. What this man is saying, indirectly and directly, that it is the system of white supremacy, it is the system of miseducation, it is the system of incarceration, it is the system of misdiagnosing our boys with ADHD and giving them drugs, it is the system itself that creates the pathological behavior. So people aren't sick, they are simply the victims of a sick system. Don't take Umar Johnson's word for it. Read what the European has to say.
Wow. Again, kinsman to Frederick Bailey Douglass, Mr. Umar Abdullah Johnson. I think a real important part of that, the prison industrial complex, greater confinement, the rampant amount of homosexual activity. In one of your lectures, you talk about how, as a result of the system of white supremacy, black people do not have a socialization process. Meanwhile, white people have all kinds of socialization processes, including the homosexual socialization process. And I think a key aspect of that is prison. Can you touch on how that relates to the lack of black manhood?
Yes, indeed. One of the political side effects of emasculization has been the effeminization of the black male. A black man who grows up a man and stays a man should be honored and revered as a hero amongst the race if he did nothing else but keep his black manhood. I want to say that again. A black man in this society who grows up a man, stays a man, maintains his manhood, should be celebrated and honored just for remaining a black male, because white supremacy is designed to make women out of all black people, to make everybody, all black people, their consort, to make all black people their source of exploitation, their source of usury. They want to effeminize the entire race, the man, the woman, and the child. And because black men are not allowed to be black men, and because we suffer constant harassment and victimization at the hands of white supremacy, one way that a lot of black men have come to cope with the threat and danger of white supremacy is to do what? Drop their manhood and any external identifiers of that manhood. For example, Brother Gus, if you go into a lot of our institutions of higher learning, particularly not our, but even our, the HBCUs, but even if you look at European universities, you will find that a lot of the black men, other than our, you know, well-known scholar warriors or scholars, because most of them don't struggle, so they're not warriors, they're just scholars. But you will see that many of the black scholars who are in predominantly white institutions of higher learning are very effeminate, very effeminate. There is no manhood energy, no masculine aura. There's no bass in their voice. The sisters don't feel protected when they are in their company. Rather, they feel like they are in the company of one of their girlfriends. This is intentional, because the only black man that a white man feels comfortable around is a black man who does not exude African masculinity. So if you want to be successful in the European system, you can't exude what? African masculinity. For example, look at President Obama. And I'm not saying he's totally effeminate, but if you look at the way he behaves, you do not feel a strong African aura of manhood emulating from President Obama, okay? At most of your national black figures, look at someone like Michael Eyre Dyson. And I'm not attacking the brother, but you don't get a strong sense of masculine energy from these types. And the reason why you don't, they have had to conform. They have had to numb their black manhood in order to make white people feel safe. In other words, if a black woman wants to feel safe around white people, she has to process her hair, put a wig on, or a weave. A black woman with natural hair who exudes any form of African dress is automatically making Europeans uncomfortable. Why? Because you are not accepting white supremacy as the dominant mode of operations in this country. For you to wear your hair like that is to say that you are rebelling against the fact that we say our hair is better. So when a black man stands up to a white man and say, I am man, and not even saying it, just by being who he needs to be, the white man's automatic reaction is to destroy him. So how do I succeed amongst white people as a black man? I have to adopt effeminate characteristics. Now, I want to differentiate and distinguish between effeminization and homosexualization, okay? You can be homosexual and be masculine. You can be effeminate and be heterosexual. You tend to see both of them together, but there's a lot of brothers who are not homosexual but who have become effeminate and have been socialized to be effeminate so they can succeed. They're married, never had sex with other men. They are heterosexual, but they are effeminately heterosexual, okay, which means that they're not totally exuding African manhood. And then on the other side, you got brothers who are totally masculine. These brothers are masculine. These brothers are bold, and some of them might, in fact, intimidate white folks. But guess what? They're homosexual. And once they let Europeans know that I'm a homosexual, the European now feels comfortable, because even though you're exuding African masculinity, I still know at the end of the day, you are really a woman. I will accept you.
Wow. I want to give folks an opportunity to ask some questions, but I know a lot of people, they get real uncomfortable when they hear anyone speaking assertively in opposition to so-called homosexual behavior. And I thought it was really important in one of your previous lectures, you talked about how we shouldn't look at this so-called homosexuality. We shouldn't look at it as a moral issue or a political issue. We should look at it as a population control strategy. Can you kind of deconstruct that?
okay, in terms of the homosexuality.
Yes, sir.
Yes, indeed. One of the things we have to understand about homosexuality in the black community, it is a political movement. There's nothing homosexual about black people. Historically, we've never practiced the behavior. Back home in Africa, we don't even have a word for it. We do now because it's amongst us. But when you study ancient African literature, when you study ancient African etymology, there was no word for homosexuality amongst human beings. The homosexual movement against black people started around the same time that the HIV/AIDS movement against black people started, at the beginning of the 1970s, in the aftermath of the assassination of Dr. King, and in the aftermath of the Civil Rights Bill and in the Voting Rights Act. Because it was perceived by the dominant population of white people that black people would now be amassing power that we would never got, that we would never get and still do not have, they decided that something would need to be done to begin immediately to eliminate this dangerous population from the American body politic. And by dangerous population, we are talking about the black race. So in 1972, the Rockefeller World Population Council, in concert with Planned Parenthood International, decided that it would be in the best interest of white supremacy if homosexuality was taken out of the DSM, the Mental Diagnostic Bible. It would be better if we got homosexuality, if they got homosexuality removed as a sexual deviation from the DSM-2. And so with publication of the DSM-3, I believe it was, homosexuality was no longer listed. This was done in particular for black people. Why? Because they knew that they were going to push homosexuality into schools as a form of education to convince an entire generation of black children to have sex with their own gender as a permanent lifestyle, not as a temporary source of pleasure, but as a permanent lifestyle. In fact, one of the executives of the Rockefeller World Population Council had even went on record to say that if you give me the minds of their children, I can control their future. And I want all of your listeners, Brother Gus, to be crystal clear about one thing. Homosexuality is being pushed in the black community as a strategy of population control. In other words, if we can convince an entire generation of black children to have sex with other black people of the same gender, then we will prevent an entire generation of black people being born. In other words, 10 generations of homosexuality in the African-American community, and there will be no more Africans in the African-American community. For example, there are approximately 4.5 million black boys in America's public schools. 4.5 million black boys in America's public schools. If they can convince, if Arne Duncan, the current Secretary of Education, who supports a mandatory homosexual curriculum, by the way, if Arne Duncan is successful in getting homosexuality pushed in the black public schools, if he is successful, those 4.5 black men will be having sex with other black men. And if those black men are having sex with other black men, the sisters are not being impregnated, and we are slowly seeing the decline of the black population in addition to police brutality, AIDS, Ebola, West Nile, black-on-black homicide, and so-called accidental deaths such as stillborn babies. So I want it to be crystal clear. Homosexuality is being used to reduce our numbers. And one of the reasons why we see homosexuality coming out of the DSM in 1973 and we see the first documented case of HIV/AIDS in the 1970s was because they experimented on black men. In other words, as soon as they decided that homosexuality would no longer be a crime, they gave black homosexuals the HIV virus. This is no longer a crime. We're going to give it to these homosexual men so they can infect other homosexual men and infect their own women. To make it real crystal clear, we're going to turn black men gay. We're going to infect those gay black men with AIDS, and those gay black men are going to give the AIDS to their own women. And that is why, Brother Gus, HIV is the number one cause of death for black women on the face of the earth wherever they live.
Wow. I want to check to see if Justice has some more questions, and then I'm going to go to the phone lines. Justice, if you have some questions, go right ahead.
If a white person is mistreating a non-white child, what should you say or do to prevent that mistreatment?
Repeat that one more time, Princess.
If a white person is mistreating a non-white child, what should you say or do to prevent that mistreatment?
if a white person is mistreating a non-white child, this is what I believe. Black people have to learn how to do two things. Improve our decision-making around white people. If you're in America and you're black, you're going to have to deal with white people, or you're going to have to deal with the flunkies that he put in place to deal with you. And as a result of that, your survival is going to be based on an improved decision-making process. In other words, sometimes the best thing to do when someone is offended by white folks, especially if it's only a verbal assault, is to ignore them. You have to ask yourself, what do I gain, or what do my people gain by me reacting to this European? For example, there's sometimes I've heard things come out of the mouth of Europeans that I didn't agree with, but I decided that it wasn't in the best interest of my race to speak on it right then and there. Maybe I would wait till I had a lot of Europeans around and then expose the devil for who he was around everybody, so now it's on record. Or sometimes I simply decided to just let that one go by because that particular person was not in a position to really do any harm to me or my race, so I would just allow that ignoramus to just be. We have to decide which acts we're going to ignore and which acts we're going to attack. My problem with black people is we tend to ignore the acts that we should be dealing with, and we tend to focus on the irrelevant acts. For example, let's say a white person rides down the street and calls you an N-word. Okay, they're not going to go to jail for calling you an N-word. Some black people might want to chase them down. If they catch them, they might beat them up. Now you're in jail for beating up the European for calling you an N-word. We have to be careful because a white man may come up to Umar Johnson by virtue of who I am and what status I hold in my community, and call me an N-word to incite me to attack him so now I can go to jail and lose what I have to fight for my people. So I have to be smart. I have to understand that this is a chess game. It is not checkers. And when you play chess, you cannot be emotional. On the flip side, if black people are being systematically discriminated against, like our children in the school, we don't do anything about that. But let a white person call a black person an expletive, we're all over the TV screaming. But when there's systematic oppression, we don't do anything. I want us to reverse that trend. I want us to start attacking systematic, structural white supremacy, and I want us to be a little bit more decisive, okay, as to whether or not we want to deal with the individual acts of racism that really have no control or power over us or what we need to be doing for ourselves. So we have to think. Think first. Is it worth it, number one? Okay, and if it is worth it, we should go after it 100% with all tenacity, but we should not be wasting our time on irrelevant acts of discrimination.
Okay, that'll be all for now.
Thanks, Princess.
Mm-hmm. I want to go to the phone lines. I know folks have some questions. Person who called in, last four digits, 2736. 2736. If you have a question, go right ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Gus. Question for the guest. What do we need to do as a community to convince each other that we're not the enemy and that we need to turn all of that hate and aggression towards our true enemy?
Excellent question, beloved. I'm going to give you two examples. And although I don't support either of these examples totally, I want you to see the wisdom in it. When Mao Zedong came into control of China, he saw to it that almost 1 million people were exterminated. He shut down the borders of China and made sure that no Western propaganda could infect the minds of his children, of the nation's children. A lot of people thought what he did was cruel. But when you look at China today, it is where it is by virtue of the strategies that Mao Zedong put into effect. In other words, we have to realize that unless we stop the negative information from coming into our people, we'll never be able to gain control of our people. And by control, I don't mean a dominating control, but a control that allows us to operationally unify with each other. Another example is Idi Amin of Uganda. Although he was Pan-Africanist, okay, there were some things about Idi Amin I did not like. But one thing I have to give respect to Idi Amin for doing was whenever a foreigner came into Uganda and thought that they were going to treat the Ugandan people as if they were less than them, they were expelled. When white dignitaries came to Uganda to meet with Idi Amin, and I even have a picture of this, he would make them get on their hands and knees and pay respect to him as the emperor of Uganda.
He did this to create an atmosphere in the mind of black people that had been so used to colonial liver for 100 years. And believe it or not, by virtue of some of the things that Idi Amin did, he's been able to transform the consciousness of his people. When's the last time you see white people on their knees paying respect to an African dignitary? Black people have always gotten on their knees and bended down on one knee for Europeans. I'm saying that to say that we are not going to be able to save everybody. Just like Idi Amin exterminated some Africans, just like Mao Zedong exterminated some Chinese. I'm not advocating exterminating black people. I want to be clear. I'm not advocating that. But I am advocating disassociating ourselves with some members of our race until they are ready to come back into the fold. I think we are spending too much time and resources trying to fix adults as opposed to raising our children the way that they need to be. As my ancestor Frederick Douglass used to say, it is better to raise strong men or to raise healthy men than to repair broken adults. Or it's better to raise strong boys than to repair broken adults. I don't want us to be too reactionary. If you notice, we've been reactionary for the last 40 years. We've been trying to fix the adults, get them to see that what they're doing is wrong, get them to see that we need to unite. We have to understand that about 25 to 45% of the black people in America are never going to unite with the rest of us, could care less about who we are, could care less about their Africanity. So what we have to do is find the ones who do care. And most importantly, we got to raise up our children. Every time a new child is born into this world, every time God gives us a new life, that's an opportunity for us to get right what we've gotten wrong. The problem is, as Brother Gus said earlier, we don't have a socialization system. So while we're trying to convince the 25-year-old brother to stop beating his woman and harming his community, we're not showing the 5-year-old brother how to respect his mom and obey his big sister. We are neglecting our children to look out for our adults. I'm saying at this point in this critical hour of our existence as African people, it's time to choose which adults need to be neglected and start focusing the rest of our energy on the proper raising of a new generation of African babies.
Person who called in, your number showing up as a blocked number. Person who called in with a blocked number. Did you have a question for Umar Abdullah Johnson?
Is that me?
That would be you.
Absolutely. Okay. Greetings. Since you were on the show the last time, I've looked into the program for national certification for school psychologists, and I wanted to ask if you're going to get your bachelor's degree. Does it need to be in psychology, or can it be in something like African history or African American history before you go for the master's in school psychology? And why do you think they're promoting white men to black women so hard if even we have the genetic ability to annihilate white genetics?
Okay. Well, number one, your bachelor's, like with any field of study, your master's degree does not have to be in the same field as your bachelor's degree, okay? For example, a lot of lawyers did not major in pre-law as undergrads. A lot of psychologists didn't major in psychology as undergrads. It does not matter what you majored in undergrad. What matters is your grade point average, your QM, and your GRE scores if you're going to a college that actually requires GRE scores. It's the scores in the QPA that matters more so than what your major is. And I do encourage you to pursue that career. We need more African school psychologists to prevent so many of our children from going into greater miseducation. Just like we have confinement and greater confinement, we have miseducation, and then we have greater miseducation. Special education, Brother Gus, is greater miseducation. But, good sister, if you want to talk more about that, please feel free to email me. Not only you, but anyone who's listening to the Context of White Supremacy radio show, if you want to get in contact with me to schedule a lecture, an interview of your own, talk to me about careers in psychology, please feel free to call me at 215-989-9858. That's 215-989-9858. You can reach me by email at umarabdullahjohnson@yahoo.com. umarabdullahjohnson@yahoo.com. My bio can be found at blackexperts.com, blackspeakers.com, greatblackspeakers.com. I'm also on Facebook. And to get to the sister's other question, white men have always used black women as a way to control the black community. Okay? They exterminate black men as a way of exterminating the black community. But they use black women to gain access to and control over the black community. So a white man marrying a black woman, which is rare, by the way. I want to make sure we understand that. It is rare. The incidence of white men who marry black women is so small. The biggest incidence of interracial marriage is black men and white women. Most white men who date black women only use them as sexual favors, because in the white community, there's a myth that you really haven't had good sex until you've had a black woman, and you really haven't had good sex until you've had a black man. So a lot of black men, a lot of white men date our sisters only so they can get their rocks off and fulfill their European manhood, because many of them are taught that you got to have a black woman in order for you to really, really not only experience sex, but to become a man. Okay, so a lot of black women dating white men thinking they're going to get married or going to get their feelings hurt. Those men are only using them for sexual favors, and then they're going to cast them back into the community from which they came. So they're not pushing white men on black women. Okay, they're not doing that. Okay, it is black men who are pushing themselves on white women.
I was speaking in regards to all the commercial advertisements, movies, TV shows, internet pop-up ads.
I follow you, Queen. A lot of that is being done to confuse you. Remember, whenever you're fighting a war, you want to confuse the victim. So by seeing all these interracial couples on television, and I'm seeing a lot of movies with interracial couples, I'm even seeing a lot of rap videos where the woman driving next to the rapper is not the Shenanigans Queen with the weed, but a white woman. This is being done, okay, to confuse the victim. In other words, black people believe they're being mistreated. But when they turn on the television, the propaganda and brainwash tube, they say, well, wait a minute, we can't be getting mistreated because, look, there's a black man with a white woman. There's a white man with a black woman. That's only being done for confusion. If you look at the rate of interracial marriage of the white community outside into the black community, it's almost non-existent. It is almost exclusively a black male, white female thing. So I do understand what you're saying, but that's only being done to confuse the victim. The white man has been master at making black people think that he really believes in integration when the only thing he believes about is extermination. He is integrating you into a system so he can more readily exterminate you. And in fact, if you read the Brown versus Board of Education majority decision, you will see that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in 1954 said that one of the reasons he voted against segregation was because he felt that by integrating the black with the white, they could achieve their goals more effectively. I said the reason why the public schools was integrated is because white people believed that they could achieve their goals of racial control and extermination more effectively.
I wanted to hop in to make sure I plugged the radio program, the Umar Abdullah Johnson Show. I believe it's every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern at www.wnwr.com. Every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Is that correct, Mr. Umar?
Yes, it is. That runs from March until the end of September. So I'm actually coming up on my final four or five shows. I want your listeners to tune in this Wednesday if they have time. I'll be on from 6 p.m. to 7:45. Again, it's New World Radio. That's where the WNWR.com comes from. You can also listen to the Umar Johnson Show on your phone at no extra charge at 215-554-6101. And the topic of this Wednesday show is the philosophy and opinions of Umar Johnson, religion and spirituality. Last week we did my philosophy and opinions as it relates to Pan-African nationalism and the state of the race. But this Wednesday we will be looking at religion and spirituality and how it's being used against the black community. I also want to invite your listeners out to the National Black Theater in New York City, Harlem, New York City, the National Black Theater. I will be giving a free presentation on post-traumatic slavery disorder, part 4, the miseducation of the 21st century Negro. That will be Monday, September the 27th at 5 o'clock. There is no cost. Monday, September 27th, 5 p.m., no cost. The National Black Theater, Manhattan, Harlem, New York City, 125th and 5th.
I'm also hosting a dinner lecture here in Philadelphia on Wednesday, October the 25th at 6 o'clock at the Songhai Cultural Center in North Philadelphia, which is going to be entitled The State of Black Philadelphia, White Supremacy in the City of Jim Crow. And I will be on Chicago Public Television on September the 18th, that Saturday, I believe it's September the 18th. Email me or Facebook me to make sure, but I'm going to be doing an interview, face-to-face live interview, which will be followed by a presentation in the community with Brother Dawa Israel, and that's going to be on Chicago Public TV. I don't have the station offhand, but that'll be September the 18th, I believe. So all my Chicago people, please come on out. I got to get the exact information because right after the television interview, we're going to do a public forum in Chicago as well.
Outstanding. Please.
What was the phone number again? I'm sorry, I missed it.
Oh, not a problem. My phone number is 215-989-9858. 215-989-9858. I also want to let your listeners know that I offer a free psychoeducational parent workshop for the communities and black parents, community organizations, and churches. It is free. Depending on where you live, you may have to pay for my transportation and lodging, but there is no fee for the presentation. I train black parents on the five main areas of miseducation, which is special education, disruptive behavior, educational law, the expulsion process, okay, and also institutional racism as it relates to the schools and how homosexuality is being perpetrated. So if there's any listeners who want to host that workshop, which is going to be very, very important now that public school is about to begin, please feel free to contact me and get scheduled. I'll also be flying out to Ohio to speak for the Urban League up in Ohio sometime in October as well. So for my Ohio family, look for me there. And I'll be speaking in Atlanta, Georgia, for the National Black African Holocaust Conference, Brother Eric Teray Muhammad. That's going to be the weekend of November 19th. Please go to his website, the Black African Holocaust Conference. Everybody's going to be presenting there. Karenga, Asante, I think Minister Farrakhan's coming. A lot of positive people going to be there, and I'm also going to be presenting there as well. So every month in the fall, I'll be in a different city to educate our race.
Okay, thank you for that, but can you please give me the radio program number?
Oh, the radio information. Okay,
yeah.
I'm sorry. The phone number for the radio show, Listen Live. This is the Listen Live number. You call it and you can hear the show over your phone, 215-554. 6101. Again, you can hear the show at WNWR.com or on your phone at 215-554-6101. If you're in the Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware area, you can hear it on regular radio at 1540 AM.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it. That'll be all for now.
Person who called in last four digits 1974. Did you have a question?
Thanks for taking my call, brother. You were speaking about black men and so-called scholars in the institution. Many of them are not displaying black masculinity. I was wondering if you could define that a little bit more in depth, because some of our brothers have the perception that black masculinity means to sleep with a lot of sisters, listen to loud hip-hop music and whatnot. So if you don't mind, could you go into a little bit more detail about that? Thanks.
Yes, indeed. Let me first deal with the brothers who are defining their manhood in purely sexual and aggressive fashion. One thing you have to understand about human nature, and men in particular, that we all have a need to feel good about ourselves. Everybody does. And when we are not allowed to feel good about ourselves for doing positive things, then we automatically make ourselves feel good about doing the negative things. That's one of the reasons why you see black men brag about how many women they slept with,
Hopefully they're not still doing that, but I know some of them are, especially our youth, because this is how we're socialized by the ultimate. Okay, manhood depends on how many people you can beat up and how many women you can impregnate. Now, harming other black men, okay, by beating them up and harming other black women by giving them babies that you don't want to take care of is destructive to the black community. But it doesn't matter because I have a need to feel good about myself. And since white supremacy is not going to allow me to feel good about myself by getting a decent education or feel good about myself by getting a decent job or feel good about myself by owning my own business necessarily or feeling good about myself by being a leader in my community without having to be exterminated by them, all he has left me was sex and violence. And because the only thing he has left me is sex and violence, because I have a human need to feel good about myself, I'm going to use sex and violence as a way to develop a positive self-concept about myself. For example, I find the same thing in academics. My dissertation, if these Europeans ever allow me to defend it, okay, looks at the relationship between self-concept and academic achievement. Guess what the research is showing me? The research is showing me that black boys disidentify with academics altogether. And that is how a black male who has all F's on his report card, a black male who has dropped out of school, even if he is not an athlete, even if he is not an athlete, still feels good about himself. Why? Because he has simply disidentified from the system that has not allowed him to be a success and totally identify with systems that have allowed to be him, that have allowed him to be a success, namely the systems of sex and violence. So until we give black men, until we as a community fight to give black men something else to be proud of, they are going to continue to use sex and violence as a way to affirm their manhood. And to talk about the other issue you mentioned about the intellectual, Negro intellectuals posing as warriors, scholar capitalists who are posing as scholar activists. A scholar capitalist is someone who speaks, talks, writes, and teaches to get paid. They're capitalists. They're simply using culture as a means to the money. A scholar activist is someone who is using the information to liberate. They are not primarily concerned with money. They are primarily concerned with liberation and emancipation. They are at black community meetings and organizations offering their services for free, like Umar Johnson does, without a price tag. That's the difference between a scholar capitalist and a scholar activist. If you go to half these black scholars and ask them to come to your community and do something free, they'll look at you like you're crazy because they're not scholar activists. They are scholar capitalists. And to that end, there's a book, good brother, that I think you would like to read. It's an excellent book. It is called Betrayal. Betrayal. The subtitle is How Black Intellectuals Have Abandoned the Ideals of the Civil Rights Era. How black intellectuals have abandoned the ideals of the Civil Rights Era. And it is written by Houston A. Baker Jr. Houston A. Baker Jr., who is a professor at Vanderbilt University. The book Betrayal is published by Columbia University Press. You can actually purchase it, I believe, by going to their website, CUP, which stands for Columbia University Press, cup.columbia.edu. I want you to read this book. He talks about how these intellectuals benefited from the Civil Rights Act and benefited from the Civil Rights struggle and then turned their back on the masses of black people. Read Betrayal by Houston Baker.
Wow. Thank you so much for the information. I'm jotting books down furiously. Person who called in, last four digits, 7158. Did you have a question? 7158.
Peace.
Greetings.
Yes, sir. My question to the brother. I guess I'm going to throw a curveball or whatnot. It's not really talked about in the black community too much, but my question is, how do we reach black men who are not interested in dating or marrying white women, but who rather or who are very interested in interracial marriage and sex with non-black Latinos and Asian women and other non-blacks to produce light-skinned babies and wavy-haired babies? The case for not entering into interracial sex with white women, I think, is quite abundant and clear, as history is the case. But so how do we effectively make the case for non-interracial sex in relationship with other non-black peoples as we do so well with whites?
Excellent question, brother, and I thank you for the call and the question. As I said in one of my previous responses to Brother Gus's question, we have to decide who is interested in the race and who is not interested in the race. There's some black men, once they receive an adequate psycho history of who they are as black men, will abandon the practice of dating and sleeping outside their race. Other black men can know the psycho history of African people and still decide that that's what they want to do. Those are the types of people who in China or in Uganda would have been exterminated, but we're not going to do that. We're simply going to disassociate from them until they're ready to come back into the fold with an African frame of mind. For example, in the Jehovah Witness religious movement, and I'm not Jehovah Witness, nor do I particularly support that form of religion because the founder of the Jehovah Witnesses was a racist who segregated blacks from whites in the early part of his mission. And I want all my black Jehovah Witness brothers and sisters to study the early years of the Jehovah Witness movement, and you'll find that the man who founded your movement was a white supremacist. But one of the things they do in the Jehovah Witness orthodoxy is that when you don't behave the way you're supposed to behave, you're excommunicated. We have to do the same thing. We shouldn't disrespect or mistreat our brothers. I don't want it to be adversarial, but we simply say, look, brother, until you start practicing the word you need to practice, you ain't allowed over my house. You ain't allowed to come to these community meetings, brother. You ain't allowed to be around my children giving them those negative role models. We have to be courageous as black men and say, brother, you have a right to live your life the way that you want, but that's not acceptable. That's anti-African behavior, and I'm going to disassociate from you until you decide that you want to learn about who you are. So, number one, let's not waste too much time on those who ain't going to change, because the bottom line is a lot of them not. Mao Zedong knew that, okay? Idi Amin knew that. Jean-Jacques Dessalines, first emperor of Haiti, he knew that, okay? So all we can do is disassociate from those who don't want to be. Don't waste your time, brother, on somebody who don't want to be an African. This is a blessing from God. This is a blessing from our ancestors to be an African. You have the oldest DNA on the face of the planet. There's nobody older than the African, and you carry within you the energy and accomplishments of every African who has come before you, and especially those in your own bloodline. They are born again through you, so it's a privilege to be an African. And just like the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey said, the white man has made being black a curse. I shall make it a blessing. And we have to make being an African a blessing. So for brothers who are in love with white culture, because if you're in love with white women, you're in love with white culture. For brothers who are in love with white culture, once they see that we love who we are, many of them are going to start second-guessing their behavior. We have to reclaim our race the same way Europeans have claimed our race. How do they propagate? How do they brainwash black people? They do it unconditionally. You have to do the same thing. When somebody wants to make somebody join their religion, they don't just hit them with a whole bunch of dogma. They invite them to the events. They invite them to the lectures. They invite them to the trips. We got to do the same thing. When you're having something conscious in your city, invite an unconscious brother. Invite an unconscious sister. Do not try to force your ideology on them right away, because they will run away from you because they have been taught to hate. That is their psycho history. So we have to give them their real psycho history that predated the mental conditioning of the European. Invite them to come amongst you. And once they have been around you and saw the wisdom of what you're doing, they will naturally gravitate to it. When I used to be Minister of Education for the Marcus Garvey movement, there was a lot of people who say, I can't say race first, Brother Umar. I'm not there. I can't say I'm race first. I would say, you know what, brother? You know what, sister? It's okay if you can't say that. Well, do you mind coming to the meeting? We're showing the film tonight. Do you mind coming? Okay, we're having Garvey Week. Do you mind participating? Don't try to beat them up consciously, because their conscious mind will resist them. Get them unconsciously by doing what? The same thing the European does. Inundate them with positive images of themselves and what you're trying to do. And if you do that long enough, I don't care who it is. I don't care who it is. If you give somebody positive propaganda, just like if you give them negative propaganda, sooner or later they're going to succumb to it. The reason why we are losing the propaganda war, the misinformation war, is because we are not inundating our people with enough positive propaganda about who they are and who we must become.
Person who dialed in, last four digits, 5716. 5716. Your line is open if you have a question. Are you just listening, 5716? Okay, I will assume you're listening. The last four digits, 2736. 2736. Did you have a question?
On the train, Gus.
Oh, okay. If you get to a quiet spot, I guess press 1 and I'll get you. Person, I'm assuming this is Skype or something. Person who called in, I guess, from a Skype line, your line is open. Person, if you dialed in from a Skype line, the number is just showing up as 0123456. So if you called in from, I guess, a block number or a Skype line, if you have a question, go right ahead. Okay, I'll assume you're just listening. I will double check. I think 818, did you have a follow-up question, 818?
Yes, one more. I wanted to ask Brother Johnson, those of us who may be interested in doing books for children or things for black children, do you know of any black-owned publishing companies that we may be able to get those books out through?
Oh, certainly. Without a doubt, without a doubt, you have Black Classic Press. The brothers and sisters there have been doing it for a while. You have African World Press. Okay, you also have Majority Press, which is Tony Martin, who is the biographer for Marcus Garvey. He did the Race First, the Ideological and Organizational Struggles of Marcus Garvey, the UNIA. He has his own publishing company through which all of the Marcus Garvey publications, official Marcus Garvey publications, are actually distributed. You have Broadside Press in Detroit, Third World Press in Chicago, Black Academy Press in New York, Third Press in Baltimore, Black Classic Press, Baltimore. You have Johnson Publishing, the book division. You have Lotus Press in Detroit, Winston Derrick Publishers in Nashville, Harlem River Press in New York, Freelance Press in Cleveland, Professional Publishing House, Amber Book Publishing in Phoenix. You have the African World Press in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, Just Us Books, East Orange, New Jersey. You got Red Sea Press. So you have several of them. I know you didn't get all of them, but if you send me an email, Queen, I'll send you a list of the black publishing companies. And that is a wonderful idea, sister, because we need more books for our youth. They have no books to read that are exciting, energizing, and consciousness-raising, and that's why they're watching Superman, which is nothing but white supremacy.
Thank you.
In church, you get Jesus. On TV, you get Superman. It's all white supremacy.
Our guest on the program this Wednesday, he's a black male, and he has a whole essay talking about Shaquille O'Neal and the black male, Dwight Howard, their whole feud about who's Superman. And he said that was a sad illustration of white supremacy, where you have these two huge black males arguing about who is the real white identified person. Should be Wednesday.
And Dwight Howard is either married to or dating a European woman, by the way.
Wow. I didn't know that.
You should not be surprised.
Wow. Wow.
And Shaquille O'Neal used to be in love with Britney Spears several years ago. I don't think he actually dated her, but he was in love with Britney Spears, and I think he was married to a black woman while at the same time infatuated with Britney Spears.
Really?
Yes. He was on TV. Had an interview. They said he went somewhere to the All-Star game or something, and they said, why are you here? He said, for Britney Spears. And they said, why do you like Britney Spears? And he smiled, and he said, you know why I like Britney Spears.
Wow.
Wow. Yes, sir, baby. White supremacy doesn't take a time out, neither can we. It never takes a time out, neither can we.
Wow. Man. Non-Mighty Wick, did you have a question or a comment for Mr. Umar Abdullah Johnson?
Yes, thank you. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Johnson, for coming on again and sharing constructive information. I remember when you came on in June, it was very constructive. You seemed really well-informed and dedicated to helping non-white people out, and I just wanted to thank you for that. So that's all.
All right. Thank you, beloved. Thank you, beloved. And, again, I want everybody to tune into the show Wednesday, the Umar Johnson Show, Religion and Spirituality, How It Is Being Used Against Us, WNWR.com, or on your phone, you can hear it live, 215-554-6101. If you forgot that information, feel free to email me at umar@abdullahjohnson@yahoo.com or call me, 215-989-9858. I hope to see some of you on the 27th of September at the National Black Theater Hall of New York City when I present for the very first time Post-Traumatic Slavery Disorder, Miseducation of the 21st Century Negro. The event is free.
Can you give us the date for that one more time, please, sir?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. That's Monday. I believe it's the last Monday in September. Monday, September 27th, 5 p.m. And we're probably going to go to about 8 or 9. We're going to really hit them hard. 5 p.m., National Black Theater, Hall of New York City, Monday, September 27th. The event is free. It doesn't cost you anything. Come on out and get your education. For those of you who want to come to Philadelphia, you can come to Philadelphia in October, Wednesday, October 20th. I will be doing a dinner lecture at the Songhai Cultural Center, and that will be entitled The State of Black Philadelphia, White Supremacy in the City of Brotherly Love, but the information will be relevant for black people who live in any major city. And, of course, I'll be in Atlanta November 19th for the Black African Holocaust Conference, so please make that journey down there. It's going to be a powerful event, Brother Eric Teray Muhammad. So I'll be speaking down there on another aspect of post-traumatic slavery disorder. And I'll be up in Chicago the week, I think it's September 18th, I'll be on Chicago Public Television. And I will be doing a free presentation right after the TV show, so you'll be able to watch me in Chicago on TV. And then we're going to go straight into a session in the community where I can deal with a lot of information that I didn't get to during the Chicago interview.
Wow. I want to check with Justice to see if she had any other questions. I had two more, but I wanted to make sure Justice was straight. Did you have any other questions, Justice?
Not at this moment.
Okay. I had a loyal listener, a black male, and he is informed about racism, white supremacy. He heard you on the program last time, and he said one of the things that he's struggling with, being a black male, in a system of white supremacy, not being allowed to be a provider, a protector, it is very difficult for him. He's married to a black female, and he said, you know, his black female, his wife, she has a great job, makes lots of money, and he said it's just very difficult psychologically, seeing his wife go out and make all the money. He's not making a lot of money taking care of the kids. Just it's very hard for him to think of himself as a man when he's not allowed to do all of the things that he feels a man, a husband, and a father should do. Do you have some suggestions to kind of help black males deal with that problem?
Well, number one, I think the problem is deeper than the amount of income that his queen is making. It's deeper than that, brother, because his sister can make more money than you, and it doesn't bother you. So if your brother want to reach this, we can talk further about that. But the issue ain't money. The issue there sounds like he's suffering from some of the effects of emasculation. That's what it sounds like. It's deeper than the money, brother, because manhood is more than just who brings home the most money. Okay? It's more than that. So we have to see what is his definition of black manhood. We got to start with his beliefs. What is his core beliefs about black manhood? But it's deeper than what she's making. From a psychotherapy standpoint, it's way deeper than that. There's something deeper there that he might not be aware of, we need to talk about.
Wow. Okay. I guess if you could share, what is your definition for black manhood?
Wow. You know what? That's the first time I've been asked that question, and that's an important question. So what we're going to do, we're going to save that definition for the next interview because I want it to be thorough.
Okay.
You gave me some homework, brother. You gave me some homework. I like that, though, because, you know, rarely do I not have an answer. I'm going to make sure I hit every nook and cranny on that definition. I'm going to do a manhood in a woman. That's excellent. In fact, I might got to woo that into my New York City presentation. Brother Justin gave me some homework. Okay. I like that.
You loaded us up with a lot, so I'm glad we were able to at least give you one thing you can work on after
the show. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I love it. I'm going to work on that. We need a working definition. Yes, sir. And there are some out there, but I want one that's coming from a pan-African nationalist standpoint and not from an integrationist or a capitalist-minded standpoint.
Wow.
Because you follow me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Wow. Okay. Okay. Do we have time for a final question? Oh, did we lose Mr. Umar?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Do we have time for a final question?
Oh, for me, sure.
Oh, okay. I believe it. Well, I'll ask it plain. How long do you think it's going to take us to resolve the problem of racism, white supremacy?
Well, here's the thing. In order for white supremacy to fall, there must be something stronger to replace it. If most people on the earth are hungry and starving and don't know where their next meal is going to come from, I think it's crystal clear that people don't desire white supremacy, but they're too afraid to do something about it, nor do they know what to do about it. That means that it is in the natural God-given scheme of things for African people to take back our rightful positions in the world order, because it is only through an African cultural and spiritual system that all of the world's people will be provided for. So in saying that, we really ain't even got to fight white supremacy. We have to develop, okay, the African cultural system, okay, that is automatically going to be so magnetic that everyone is drawn to it at the same time. So as we fight the European, let's make sure that we're not reactive and that we're building up that system that's going to counter the European. Nobody wants white supremacy but the white man. So once another system comes that is stronger than that and that the people can love and be a part of, it's going to win overnight. Marcus Garvey said that if black people really got to know themselves, if we really got in touch with the indwelling spirit, in 24 hours we could create a new reality. Mr. Garvey said 24 hours, Brother Gus. It ain't that long. Once we get on the same page, it ain't that long after that we're going to win. And that is why the FBI and the CIA and COINTELPRO and the Patriot Act, that is why they are so against black males, because they know it only takes a half second to light a match, brother. A half second to light a match.
Wow. That makes it sound like you don't think this is a problem that has to be around for another 300, 400, 500 years. This sounds like you believe this is a problem that can be corrected quickly.
Yes, the biggest correction is within self. All the ancient great teachers have taught us what? In the struggle between yourself and the world, second the world, focus on yourself first. Once black people fix ourselves internally as a people, individually and collectively, there's nothing outside of us, nothing that will be able to subdue us. I ultimately believe that either white supremacy will exist in the 22nd century, we're on the 21st right now, but I believe either white supremacy will exist in the 22nd century or black people will exist in the 22nd century. But one of them ain't making it, brother. Either we won't be around in the year 2200 or white supremacy won't be around in 2200. There may be white folks, but there won't be no white supremacy. So we got to decide who's still going to be standing. Is it going to be the African or is it going to be white supremacy? Because we both ain't going into the next century, brother. The Europeans have made it crystal clear. They are trying to exterminate us and make sure we don't see the dawn of another era. So we got to make up our mind. Is it going to be us? Is it going to be them? Because it ain't going to be both.
I think a final thought, your refrain, white people who believe in and practice racism, white supremacy, anything they start, they finish.
Yeah.
I don't believe white people have any intention of discontinuing the practice of racism, white supremacy. So if this system is going to end, we are going to have to put them out of business.
And let me say this too, Brother Gus, on a positive note, we're about to go into another African era of time, brother. 2012 is not the end of the world. 2012 is the beginning of another African era. The zodiac calendar that the ancient Africans put together is divided up into periods of time. And there's certain types of spiritual themes that are going to rule in that period of time. And according to the African calendar, and when 2012 comes, it's supposed to be an era of justice, brother.
justice is supposed to rule the earth for 2,000 years once 2012 starts. So we got to get ready for this, brother. There might be an Armageddon in the next couple of years. People talking about the world going to end. The world ain't going to end. It's going to be a new world. And it's going to be African people ushering in that new world. And it's going to be African men leading the new world. And it's going to be African women nurturing the new world. And it's going to be African children being groomed to run that new world. So let's get ready and take advantage of the era that the ancestors and the Almighty is about to give us. 2012, it's time to get on board. We got to get ready for this era. You have to remember slavery, colonialism, and domination, all of that was the last era, this era we in right now. Remember, the year 2000 was a new millennium. In 2012, we're going into a new era, same millennium, but a new era. And you only get that once every 2,000 years plus some change. So we are blessed to see not only the ushering in of a new millennium in 2000, but now you're about to see the ushering in of a new era in 2012. What the hell are we going to do about it?
Wow. Wow. I am very pleased. I think excellent broadcast, which I expected. I mean, he has a reputation. I knew exactly what to expect. I would love to have you back on the broadcast. I guess if you do some thinking about your definition for black manhood and black womanhood, would love to have you back to go over that with our listeners.
Yes, sir. Anytime, brother. Anytime.
We appreciate it. I have linked the radio broadcast. All you have to do is click Umar Abdullah Johnson in the description right here at Blog Talk Radio, and it will take you to the radio program. The address again, WNWR.com. You can go to the website. We'll be listening in on Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific for the Umar Abdullah Johnson Show. Thank you so much for sharing some of your time with us. I linked the DSM-4 to this episode as well, because I know last time you were with us, you highly recommended that black people go out and get that, particularly if they have kids. Pick up a copy of the DSM-4 so you can read and be more informed about these diagnoses that are given out, particularly to black kids. So DSM-4, the other books you mentioned, Betrayal, and the other book, The Lucifer Effect. The Lucifer Effect. They're all linked in the program, so you can just click on them and get more information. Thank you so much for sharing some of your Monday afternoon with us. It is always a pleasure, and we will definitely be in touch with you soon, sir.
Anytime, beloved. And if you get a chance, brother, just email me a link to the show so I can download it.
I will do it immediately.
All right. Y'all take care now.
Thank you so much, sir. Take care.
Peace again.
Peace. Context of white supremacy. Thank you. Got it into context of white supremacy. Justice Gusty Renegade, our guest for today's broadcast, Mr. Umar Abdullah Johnson. Pleasure to have him on the program. Have to do my obligatory hat tip to Sister Nefertari Mary Moot Nzinga. She was the first person who informed me about him. I think last time, as soon as I got the program scheduled, an avalanche of listeners started sending me messages saying, why don't you get Umar Abdullah Johnson on the show? But Sister Nefertari was the person who first informed me about him and told me she thought he would be a great guest on the program. And we will definitely work to see if we can get him on for a third trip, because I think that would be great to hear his definition for black manhood. And important. I think a lot of people really struggle with that in a system of white supremacy. Justice, did you have any thoughts on today's broadcast?
It was constructive, and I really appreciated the responses about the autism.
If I may ask, what sparked your curiosity about autism?
My cousin, both cousins have autism, so I wanted to get some information about that.
Wow. What you should be doing. I think that's great. Anytime you can get information that will directly help you, assist family, friends, people that you care about, does not get any better than that. That's excellent. That's excellent. Did he give you some help or information to help you get a better understanding of autism?
Yes.
Okay. Right on. I guess any listeners out there, if we have any, I don't know, doctors or people who are more informed about autism, perhaps you can pass Justice an email if you have some more information you would like to share with her. That would be great. I want you to give your email address. But I had a question that a listener emailed me for you. Are you okay taking one question?
Sure.
Okay. They were listening to yesterday's program with Mary Ra Kwesi and Ashra Kwesi, and they heard you say that you wanted to take the trip to Africa that they do, the tour that they do twice a year. And their question was, do you think, or how do you think, visiting Africa will change your thoughts, speech, and action in order to replace white supremacy with justice? That was their question.
That's a pretty hard question. it is. I guess I'm teaching other non-white people about racism, white supremacy, and when I teach them, like, they can, like, do the things that I'm doing now, like trying to replace white supremacy with justice. And then so, that's my response.
Okay. I hope that answered her question. I suspect this person, I speak with her pretty regularly, so I'm sure she'll email me back if she liked the answer or she felt she has more to ask about that question. I'm sure she'll get in touch with me. Dig that. Interesting. I also, a listener just sent this to me. Apparently, this is showing Dwight Howard. He has a offspring with a non-white female, a black female. It looks like she either is or was a cheerleader for the Orlando Magic. Now, I don't know who he's with now, but at least he did have a child, it looks like, with a black female. So I don't know if they're still together. He might be with somebody else, but it looks like he did have an offspring with a black female. So got that out. Yeah, I don't know who he's dating now, but it looks like he did have an offspring with a black female. Let's see. I'm not going to hang out today either. I'm really on the conservation of energy because we have a lot of programs, and they're adding. Program got added today. We will be back tomorrow. Excuse me, not tomorrow. We'll be back on Wednesday. Wednesday, and we'll be talking about Dwight Howard again. Who is the victim? I don't have anything bad to say about Dwight Howard or Shaquille O'Neal or anybody else. They're victim. Hopefully, they will become listeners of this program and they can be investors. I could have got my MacBook Pro like that. But yeah, they're victims, and you know. But we'll be chatting about them some more on Wednesday. Our guest, Mbewe Asia Ishangi, he is the founder of the Ghetto Times. Right online. They have journals, they have videos, essays, fantastic website. They talk a lot about racism, white supremacy. He'll be with us on Wednesday, September 1st at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, and 5 p.m. Pacific. Be going prime time on Wednesday. Should be outstanding. And we're rolling very hard this week. On Thursday, Professor Griff makes his second visit to the context of white supremacy. It'll be Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern, afternoon show, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central, and 11 a.m. Pacific. I guess if you're on the West Coast, it'll be in the morning. But Professor Griff, second trip to the context of white supremacy on Friday, Paul Ifeomi Grant, live from the United Kingdom, black male, He's authored several books, one of them, Why Willie Lynch Must Die. He will be here on Friday, September 3rd, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific. For the folks, we have a lot of UK listeners. Make sure I give a shout out. I don't know how that happened, but a lot of people are tuning in consistently in London and the UK in general. Got somebody from your neck of the woods again on this Friday morning. For folks in the UK, it will be 6 p.m. London time. Sunday, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing makes her sixth visit to the context of white supremacy, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And next Tuesday, September 7th, Kush, the Black Unifier of Positive Comedic Visions, returns to the context of white supremacy. That will be 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. This is the blackout at the context of white supremacy. Before we wrap up this broadcast, I did want to share, I'm not going to go into detail because I think this is going to be a show down the road, but I did want to share, man, we are going to go real aggressive on the no sex with white people. Like, man, after the show yesterday, and I mean pretty quickly after the show, it was within 30 minutes of the show ending yesterday on Sunday, August 29th, a non-white person contacted me. He said, you know, he needed some assistance, his non-white family. He didn't explain the situation, but just needed some assistance. And I went out. I got the whole rundown on this story. We went out. I'm not even going to explain anything. All I can say is that this yesterday, this episode that ended up taking about 2 hours of the day, right? So, I mean, this is a healthy chunk of the day. This 2 hours of trauma that involved, I mean, ended up being over 10 non-white people, some of them black, some of them non-black. All of this was rooted in sexual intercourse between white people and non-white people. And none of the non-white people present, to my knowledge, were sexually involved with a white person. Not a one. But all of this is because a different non-white person who is connected to a lot of these non-white people who were in all the chaos and conflict yesterday was having sex with a white person. And that started all of this trauma that Gus even got pulled into yesterday. It was, I mean, you talk about sad. Man, oh, if I have my, oh, I still have my switchboard. Yeah, this is worthy. This is worthy. The foolishness that went on yesterday. This is going to be a whole program. Just stay tuned. The whole 2 hours that happened yesterday, we are going to recap, the entire sad affair, because it was totally disgraceful, and having sex with white people was at the root of everything that happened. So just stay tuned. It'll be coming down the road, hopefully as soon as possible. I'm good. I'm going to go relax. It's a pretty day out here in Seattle. I'm going to relax, recuperate, prepare for Wednesday's broadcast. Justice, would you like to give your email address?
Justice.asap@yahoo.com. Again, justice.asap@yahoo.com.
Outstanding.
And
I'm sorry.
Just did you say to, like, if you get any information on autism, you should send it to Justice. Did you say that?
I believe I did. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Anybody who gets any information on that, please send me that information, especially how to fix that problem.
There you go. justice.asap@yahoo.com. If you have information on autism, she would appreciate it. I'm going to give out the suggestions again about people that want to call in, because the phone lines did fill up again today, as I thought they would. Suggestions again. Carpool for the phone, right? All this is find one person. Thousands of people have listened to this program. All you got to do is contact one person that you know, all the people that have called and chatted and such. Get a buddy. Shoot them an email. That's all you got to do. You don't have to be friends. You don't have to have a whole lot of contact. Just, hey, we're just going to agree to three-way so that both of us can have access to call the cows and ask questions. Real simple. You can work it out on the Facebook group. That's linked on the show page. Go to the Facebook group. You can go there. Hey, I'm looking to connect with one other person. That way we can three-way and make sure that, you know, we can ask our questions and listen. Even if we're just interested in listening, we can pair up, and that way more people can have access to listen and or comment on the program. Use the Facebook group. If you call and you're on the air, you can make that known. Hey, I'm willing to partner up with one person in three-way. Real easy. I don't think that would put you in too much danger. I don't think, and that would help add more people to the line. Skype works. The thing with Skype, I want to make sure I'm very clear about this. For Skype, you cannot call me to get on. I have to call you. It's very irritating when I get calls during the show because I decline. And today, I got like 1,000 calls. And I kept declining, and people kept calling, and I was explaining, I have to call you. You can't call me. And they continue to call. So please don't do that. That's the sort of irritant where I dump contact so that you won't be able to call me at all. All you have to do is get a Skype account. Once you have your Skype account, send me an email with your handle. My email address is untiljustice@gmail.com, just like it sounds. Send me an email address with your handle. I will add you. All you have to do is get online, and I can add you on Skype. You can chat, send me a message. Don't call. Just start a chat and send me a little message. Please add me to the show. Very simple. And make sure you mute your line, okay? If you do not mute your line, I am going to disconnect you because it just adds distortion to the broadcast if you're listening and typing, because we can hear you typing on the keyboard, or if you're talking to other people, if you're listening to the television, or if you just got a lot of background disturbance. Just make sure you mute your line. Really helpful and preserves the quality of the broadcast. So very simple for Skype. Email me your handle. Be on Skype during the show, and I can add you to the call. Very easy, no problem. There you go. That's another suggestion. As I said, if you want to find investors to upgrade the program to a premium broadcast here at Blog Talk Radio, you can give that money directly to the white people at Blog Talk Radio, and they will allow, I believe it's either 25 or 50 people to call in. So that would solve the problem quick, although that does cost quite a bit of money. I think it's $400. It's probably more than that, but that's another route. And I think I had four suggestions yesterday. Oh, and calling early. Calling early. If you don't want to do any of those, I would advise you call early, depending on who the guest is. If it's going to be someone like Dr. Francis Cress-Welding, I would say probably want to call before the 30-minute mark of the show, because a lot of people tend to call when she's on, and the white people at Blog Talk Radio, they only allow 6 to 7 callers. So those would be my suggestions. If you want to call, participate, ask questions, or just listen after the live stream ends at the two-hour mark. Those would be my suggestions to solve that problem. Other than that, I think that will do it. Thank you all for tuning into the broadcast. I hope it has been constructive. Again, we'll be back on Wednesday, September 1st, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Mbewe, Asia Ishangi. Should be fantastic, and we'll be chatting about Dwight Howard, Shaquille O'Neal, racism, white supremacy, should be constructive, amongst other things. That's just one of the topics on tap for Wednesday. Thank you all for tuning in. Justice, Gus T. Renegade. We will be back in a couple days. The blackout, end of summer blackout, context of white supremacy. Thank you so much. We'll be back soon. Cows signing out.